The webcam is now a commonplace tool for communication and something that's built into every computer and phone. But that wasn't what it was originally intended for. In 1993, it was born out of a need for coffee. On the line is one of the people responsible, Dr. Quentin Stafford Fraser from Cambridge University. Quentin, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Sean.
So you were working in a laboratory, you had a coffee machine, and what was the problem?
Yes, well, the problem was that there were quite a lot of us sharing this coffee machine. In a little research group in the University of Cambridge, there were probably about 15 of us, and it was just a very ordinary, you know, filter pot, nothing very inspiring. The coffee was pretty awful, but it was even more awful if you didn't get to it when it was fresh. And some of the people in the group, this building was a tower that meant that it was a terrible building, very uninspiring, and we needed, you know, coffee just to help us survive in there. And some of the people in the group were, you know, maybe two or three floors away, and they would come down to get some coffee and find either that those of us who were sitting closer to it had pinched it all, or it wasn't fresh, or it wasn't, you know, it just was even worse than it was when it was fresh. And coffee, a good flow of caffeine is very important for computer science research. So this was the problem we were trying to solve.
Right. And so the idea was that you put a camera to keep an eye on it. Was this a small camera or just a normal camera?
We wouldn't think of it as small these days, but it wasn't a huge great one. And actually, this started, you said 93, it actually started a couple of years before that. And I was looking back at the dates, and I realized that, you know, by accident or design, this is almost exactly 25 years. It was late 1991 when we did this. So you've managed to hit the quarter of a century anniversary, which I hadn't quite picked up on.
Yes.
But cameras then, we didn't have digital cameras. They were fairly small, but they had analog outputs. But we were working in the group on multimedia networks. So we were trying to see whether we could make computer networks deliver broadcast quality video, which, you know, wasn't at all clear at that time. None of the networks that were around could do that. But it meant that we had a few sort of cameras and computers that could connect to special networks and things lying around. And so we had some spare bits of kit. And so we were able to do something which, if you looked at the cost of it, would seem completely ridiculous, which was part of the reason this became popular. We took something as valuable as a camera that could connect to a computer, and we gripped it in a retort stand, I think, and pointed it at the coffee pot. And a friend, Paul Jardetsky, and I wrote some software which could essentially grab images from the coffee pot, only about three times a minute. And I wrote a little app which everyone in the group would put in the corner of their screen, and that meant they could just glance down at any point and just see how much coffee there was in the coffee pot. So it was kind of made it a level playing field. Those who weren't in the same room as the coffee machine had as good a chance as the rest of us almost of getting fresh coffee.
It was an internal network. This is being broadcast. Though I think
it was,
and this is probably where my mistake came in. It was in 1993, was it, that it actually was started to be broadcast to a wider audience?
That's right, yes, because the web started in about 91, but for the first year and a half or something, it could only really display text. So you could have different font sizes, different colors, but it was all basically text, and there weren't that many websites out there and so on. But in, I think it was early 93, the first web browsers started to get the ability to display images. And what we didn't know was, we suddenly had this idea, if you told the web browser to go to the web server and ask for an image, what would happen if the server didn't give back the same image every time? We didn't know what the browsers of the time would do. Would they show you the new one? Would they show you the old one? So we thought, where have we got a source of constantly changing images we can try this with? Ha ha ha, this networked coffee pot camera. And so another couple of friends of mine converted the software we had done so that it could output HTTP, which meant web browsers could look at it. And that meant then that the people in the lab who wanted to see how much coffee was in the pot didn't need to run our special bit of software. They could run this generic web browser. But as a side effect, it meant that the amount of coffee in the coffee pot suddenly became visible to everybody in the world. And this was a slightly wacky thing to do with a camera, and it was there weren't frankly that many wacky things on the web at the time. You know, but I think at this time, probably browsers didn't even have a way to bookmark things because, frankly, you could remember all the addresses of the websites you were interested in because there weren't very many. So when something new came up, especially if it was something a bit silly like this, it got a lot of interest. And so sometimes you would go to this web page and you'd see a coffee pot that was full, and sometimes it would be empty, and yes, sometimes it would be half full. But we suddenly realized this was becoming more of an international thing when someone sent us an email complaining that he'd gone to look at the page and it was all black. You know, the image was just completely black. And we realized that he was coming from Australia. And that, of course, we were all in bed. It was, you know, the middle of the night. And so one of the first things we had to do after making it available on the web was point a little angle point light at it so that people who wanted to have a look at it in the middle of the night could still see it.
Well, there wasn't much to watch on the internet in those days. But
That's right. This was like paint drying, but, you know.
but it was mentioned on the Archers and, you know, it became sort of a celebrity coffee pot for a while.
It did. And, you know, this was part of the fun of the whole, you know, early, I guess, dot-com years. Like, you know, things were happening so fast on the internet that stuff that would have taken a very long time in the outside world. We used to joke about internet years being like dog years because things would happen, you know, seven years in real life was 1 year on the internet. And in a very small number of years, it went from being a great novelty to being, you know, an historic artifact, or to, you know, from where did all of this webcam start to, you know, what was it like in the early days, grandpa kind of thing. So it's so it moved very fast. And and yes, we in the number of hits it got went up very fast, and it was a great story. When people wanted a lighthearted story after, you know, unpopular presidents had been elected or something like this,
yes,
this was a great thing to put on your news headlines. It made people smile.
Here's the thing, though, Quentin. Once you'd had the idea and you'd written the software, did you own it then? Are you extraordinarily wealthy?
No, that would be nice, wouldn't it? No, I live in a very modest terraced house. No, this was academia. But you see, this is part of why the web worked so well. The web, and I don't want to push too hard to try and make out that this is anything more than just, you know, a couple of afternoons fun experiment. But it is a very nice illustration of why the web became so powerful. Because we could do something that nobody had done before. We could do it without having to ask anybody's permission. We could take data that we already had from another system, and we could make it available over this newfangled World Wide Web in an afternoon, basically. Mm-hmm. And nobody had to make any profits from it. It wasn't controlled by any company. We didn't have to buy a Microsoft license to put stuff on the web or anything like that. And I think you can look at it as illustrating all sorts of reasons why the web became such a success. It wasn't owned by anyone, certainly not by me.
Yes.
But the web itself was very much an open platform that was developed as academic research and to aid academics, and in a very open way, where the designers placed no kind of restrictions on the type of data that you could transmit over the internet. And for the web in particular, it was very easy to bring other sorts of data in and display it in a web browser, which increasingly everybody had. So the things that made the coffee pot famous were actually the things that, you know, also made the web a big success. Mm.
The actual coffee pot, though, as I understand it, now resides in Germany.
It does, yes. It's it left when it heard about Brexit. No, it's one of the things that, you know, this terrible building that we used to be in the centre of Cambridge, eventually the computer lab got a nice new building. This was in 2001, I think, out on the west of Cambridge. And so the department was moving out there. And the coffee pot had always been situated in this one particular room called the Trojan Room. It was known as the Trojan Room coffee pot, and that's where you'll find it if you want to search for it online. And when the department moved, one thing that they weren't going to have anymore was this room, which had already always been the Trojan Room. So we thought, well, it's been going for 10 years. You know, if it really is like dog years, then that's sort of 3 score years and 10. It really is. And so now maybe it's, you know, time to switch it off and move on to other things. And of course, by this point, it was famous enough that there was this outcry on the web, and it got a huge amount of extra publicity just before it was turned off. So I was quoted in 1 week on the front page of the Times, the London Times, and on the front page of the Washington Post. You know, and I will never do anything else again to get that kind of publicity. But it showed that by that point, you know, people thought of this as an icon of the early web. And just when a lot of companies were, you know, advertising heavily the fact that they were now available on the World Wide Web, we were doing something as radical as turning it off. One of the coffee pots, the sort of longest serving coffee machine, and one of the cameras was auctioned on eBay. And it was bought by Der Spiegel magazine, and it's now in their offices in Germany. And they paid $5,000 for it, which I believe kept the department in coffee for quite a long time.
Quentin, thank you very much for speaking with us today. That's Dr. Quentin Stafford Fraser of the University of Cambridge.